Hi, I'm James Connor, and welcome to Inspired by Their Stories, the Pulte Family Charitable Foundation's monthly podcast.
Hello, and welcome to our fourth episode of Inspired by Their Stories. Here at the Pulte Family Charitable Foundation, we are counting down the days until the LIV Golf Team Championship, our first major golf tournament hosted at our very own St. John's Resort in Plymouth, Michigan. We'll be welcoming many of the biggest stars in golf to our course, the Cardinal, for the very first time. And we're excited to introduce St. John's Resort to a global television audience on Fox. We hope that you'll tune in Friday, August 22nd, Saturday, August 23rd, and Sunday, August 24th for the final round. And please know this, as with all of our humanitarian hotels, the Pulte Family Charitable Foundation will donate 100% of net profits from this event to nonprofit organizations serving those in need locally, across America, and around the globe. On this episode of Inspired by Their Stories, we are going to be talking about something that just screams summer to me: camp. Today, we are talking with Julia Carabardi from Camp Ozanam in Michigan. The camp is organized each year by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, Detroit, and has given thousands of kids unforgettable experiences. This is going to be such a fun conversation. So let's get started. Julia, thanks for being here. Welcome to Inspired by Their Stories.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Why don't we start by having you introduce yourself and your role at Camp Ozanam?
I'd love to. My name's Julia. I am the director at Camp Ozanam, which is run by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul in Detroit. I've been with the organization on and off since 2012, so I've been around camp for quite a while. This is my fifth year as director.
So before you go any further, Julia, I have a little bit of a confession. I have never actually attended summer camp. So all I know about camp is really what I know from TV and movies, like The Parent Trap and Salute Your Shorts on Nickelodeon. So today will definitely be an education for me.
Awesome. Well, some things are very similar and some things are very different than what you see on TV.
I'm sure. So before we dive into the camp experience, could you tell me a little bit about the Society of St. Vincent de Paul first?
Yeah, I'd love to. It's a really awesome organization that was started in 1833, I believe it was, by Frederick Ozanam. And I will just say, before we get too far into this, we have a very Midwestern pronunciation of Ozanam, so you'll hear me saying that a lot. Probably other folks from the society across the country and across the world would pronounce that differently, but we've really gotten in our habit here of saying Ozanam. So Frederick Ozanam is actually who started the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. He was living in France in his 20s and was very involved in his Catholic faith. He would be with friends out debating theology and philosophy from time to time, and was very good at debating theology and philosophy. And at one point, he was challenged by someone who was not Catholic. And the story goes, they said, "You Catholics, you know, you could talk about your faith all day long, but what do you actually do?" And that really was a turning point for Blessed Frederick Ozanam. And within a couple of months, he had founded the first conference, which then evolved into what is now this huge international phenomenon of folks called Vincentians who work to meet the needs of their neighbors by growing in gospel values and living out their faith. So it started in 1833 in France. It very quickly spread. It was in the United States by the 1840s. And then the council in Detroit was established in the 1880s. And we've been around since then. So it's a really cool organization that is all over the world, and every council is a little bit different in what they do. But what's universal among those is this element of growing in faith and holiness through service to others.
That's really amazing. And what a legacy. And how cool it is that it persists today. What is Camp Ozanam, and how does it fit within the broader sort of organization of St. Vincent de Paul's Society in Detroit?
We're a completely 100% free overnight summer camp program that's offered to kids in Southeast Michigan, run through, like I said, the council here in Detroit. The mission of our council, of the society, is, like I said before, growing in faith and holiness through service to and friendship with neighbors in need. And so when people think about what that need looks like, it's really different for different parts of the world, for different parts of the country. A lot of what the society does is meeting basic needs. So you'll see thrift stores making sure that folks are clothed and have furniture for their homes. There's a lot that the society does around preventing homelessness. We have initiatives for transitioning folks out of the justice system. There's all different sorts of things that happen throughout the society. And sometimes people do say, how does camp fit into all this? Because it seems somewhat like a luxury. But we think that for kids, that opportunity for exploration, growth, development, growing in their faith, getting more self-confidence, those are really what kids need. One of the basic needs of kids is the ability to grow and develop and learn, because that's happening at such a rapid pace when folks are young. So camp offers the opportunity for kids to have that space when many kids would not otherwise be able to have that opportunity. There's incredibly high costs for going to overnight camps. Some local ones around here cost between $750 and $950 for 1 week. So for so many families, that would just be completely out of reach. And since the early 1900s, the society decided that this is something that we think all kids deserve to have the opportunity to do. So we've been offering that opportunity.
That's amazing. I can't believe that the camp has been around for so long. Can you talk a little bit about some of the early days of Camp Ozanam?
Definitely. It's evolved quite a bit since the early days. There are some things. We actually just celebrated our 100th anniversary a couple of years ago, and part of that process was writing a history book for camp. So I could do a whole podcast just on camp history. I won't get too deep into it, but it's cool to see some elements of how camp started that are the same that they were in 1923 when we officially purchased this property and named it Camp Ozanam. Wanting to provide this opportunity to kids, focusing on things like leadership, self-confidence, independence. Some things have not changed at all with how the camp operates. And then other things have evolved quite a bit. I mean, I don't think there was state licensing in the 1920s. There certainly probably wasn't an accrediting body for camps. So a lot of the logistics, the programming, the administration have evolved quite a bit. But at the roots of it, we've stayed the same. One other big difference is that Camp Ozanam actually started as an all-boys camp when it was founded in the 20s. In the 1940s, we founded a second camp called Camp Stapleton. That was an all-girls camp, and then eventually decided to do co-ed programming in the early 2000s, which is how we still operate. So there have been tons of fun stories over the course of the camp history. There were kids here at camp when the moon landing happened, watching the moon landing on donated televisions. There were kids who were here during the race riots in Detroit, and that was something that the staff had to navigate and support families through. So through all of the history that's happened in our country, in Michigan, since the 1920s, camp has had a little slice of that throughout and has been able to grow and evolve and continue to improve to better meet the needs of families during that time.
That's amazing. 100 years is quite a milestone, and thinking about how so much history has happened over that time, and yet camp persists and camp goes on. That means that you must have served a number of campers. Do you have an idea of how many youth have come through Camp Ozanam?
We're creeping up on 129,000 kids over the course of our 100 years.
That's amazing. I'm thinking about all the memories that must have been made and all the impact that that's had.
Yeah.
I'd love to talk a little bit about what camp looks like today. So, I was preparing for our conversation, and I saw that there are actually three different types of camp experiences. Could you maybe talk about what campers experience when they come to camp today?
So when campers get to camp, and most of them get bussed up from, we have a bus stop at the Blessed Sacrament Cathedral in Detroit. They are organized into their cabin groups, probably very similar to what you'd see on a TV show or movie. That one's the same. And they're doing camp songs and name games and all those fun things. They learn a little bit about the camp rules and they get a tour of camp. And then the bulk of their time while they're here is doing our camp activities, which we like to say are are lots of fun with hidden lessons behind them. So for kids who come to camp, what we want the experience to be like is they're just having fun the whole time. They were doing archery, swimming, arts and crafts, bouldering, team building initiatives. They're helping feed the chickens or pick herbs from the gardens, learning how to build a fire. But baked into all of that is some really intentional program planning and staff training that happens to make all those really fun things actually be really cool learning experiences for the kids. So our first program is traditional camp. That's a co-ed camp that runs all 5 weeks of our summer for 8 to 12-year-olds. And they do all of the things I just talked about, all of your kind of bread and butter camp activities. We've got an adventure camp program that's for 13 and 14-year-olds. And those kids sleep in a different part of camp. So we have rustic cabins out where they're sleeping. There's no electricity. They're just screens across the front. So it's a little bit more of an outdoorsy experience, and they get to stay up later and have bonfires every night. They also go on an overnight canoe trip. So our girls just left this afternoon. They're going to be canoeing for a couple hours. They'll get to a campsite, pitch their tent, cook their food over a fire, spend the night, and then wake up tomorrow morning and canoe for a few more hours before they get picked up. They also have some leadership opportunities throughout the week to help with the younger kids. And then our last program is a smaller program that we just started within the last decade or so called our staff and training program. So that's specifically for kids who have come to camp and are interested in working on the camp staff one day. It gives them the opportunity for a little bit of a bridge. So they learn about the different roles we have at camp, what's different about being a camp staff member versus being a camper, and then they start to practice some of those roles. So they'll get assigned to cabin groups to help out in. They help in the kitchen. They help lead some activities. It's a really cool opportunity for kids who have been coming for a long time to see behind the curtain a little bit and then prepare for hopefully being on staff one day.
Yeah, that sounds so cool. I really feel like maybe I missed out on something here.
I think you might have.
So I'd love to talk a little bit about what it takes to run the camp. So how many staff, how many camp counselors are there? What does the operations of Camp Ozanam look like?
That's a great question, because the staff is really the core of what makes camp magical for kids. I mean, you can have the facilities, you can have the programs planned, but without people to be loving, responsive caregivers to make the activities fun, camp is there, it's nothing. So we operate under an 8-to-1 ratio for campers to staff, which is lower than the state licensing requirement. But we want to give a little bit more extra personalized care. So we typically this summer will have 5 cabin groups of about 16 kids each and 2 counselors in each of those cabins. So 10 counselors with a couple of floaters to fill in during breaks. Then we have a group of activity specialists who do all of the brainstorming and facilitating of the fun activities, and a leadership team. So all in all, on the program side, we've got 20 staff this year. And then we've got our maintenance crew that's mowing the lawn, cleaning the bathrooms, doing all that fun stuff. And then our kitchen staff.
Yeah, and so across the whole entire summer, how many campers will Camp Ozanam see?
This year will be close to 400 over the course of the summer. We're still rebuilding from COVID, but each year since 2021, we've increased our campers served by 10 to 20%. So it's been pretty steady growth.
Yeah, that's great. Now, I know that there's lots of different summer camps you were talking about. The comparison to what it costs to go to some of these other camps in the Metro Detroit area. What makes Camp Ozanam so special? What makes you different than some of the other summer camp experiences that that kids might go to?
Well, certainly what we try to do to make it different is really authentic engagement with our camp families. We have families that have been coming to camp for over a decade with different kids. We have tons of families, especially this year. It's been so cool to see tons of moms that went to Camp Stapleton, dads that went to Camp Ozanam who are now sending their kids to camp. So that's a really big part of what we do. And through that engagement is how we really frame what our program looks like. So it happens in a couple different ways. One, obviously, making camp free is a great first step to making it accessible. That distinguishes us from a lot of camps. But beyond being free, there are a lot of other things that are barriers to families accessing camp. So we're located up in the thumb of Michigan. We're about an hour and 45 minutes from the city of Detroit, 2 hours from other parts of the city that are maybe on the west side. So transportation is a huge barrier. We provide free busing for all of our campers from a central location. That is a big deal breaker for most families. They wouldn't be able to get their kids to camp. We offer free physicals for kids before they come to camp. We're required to have physicals on file within the last year for every kid that comes. So we have different events throughout the Metro Detroit area where people can come and get those physicals done free of charge and get help with their camp paperwork. They get a voucher to one of our thrift stores to get any supplies they need for camp, extra clothes and those sorts of things. Their bedding is provided when they get here. They get a free duffel bag to pack in. They get a free water bottle when they get there. They get a free camper t-shirt. So it's all these other little things that even if the camp experience was free, would still be really hard for families to take advantage of it, that we try to take off the family's plate and make it easier for them. So that's one big piece that makes us definitely different. And then the other piece I would say is hearing authentically from parents and campers about what they want out of the camp experience and then really being responsive to that. So of course, everyone does surveys. How are we doing? What can we do better? On top of that, which we do every year, this year we embarked on a big undertaking to update our goals for campers. So how we want campers to grow from the camp experience and utilize those enrollment events as a way to get feedback from families. So we actually let our campers and parents choose what those goals would be instead of just deciding ourselves, well, we think it's important for kids to be independent or for kids to do this. Our campers and their families got to say, if I'm sending my kid to camp or I'm coming to camp, this is what I want the experience to be and how I want to grow. So we just officially established our new goals and are really excited to be implementing those and integrating them into different parts of the camp experience as well.
Yeah, that's great. I love how connected you are to the different families. So how do families find out about Camp Ozanam in the first place? Where do they hear about you?
We have quite a few different referral sources that we would typically pull from. The first and the one that's been going on for the longest is obviously our St. Vincent de Paul conferences. So the council in Detroit has close to 140 different conferences of Vincentians or volunteers who are from typically Catholic churches in the area. So a lot of them are based out of a specific church that's serving their immediate geographic region with basic needs support. So I'm part of a conference at Shrine of the Little Flower, which is in Royal Oak. And so we've got certain zip codes where if people need assistance and they call in, our group of volunteers raises money and then does a home visit and supports those neighbors with rent assistance or energy assistance, those kinds of things. So a lot of our referrals will come from those Vincentians who are out meeting with families about other things that they need support on. And then they'll say, oh, you have a child who's 9 years old. We have this other great opportunity we'd love to offer you. So we get lots of kiddos through that, which is really cool. And then we partner with other agencies in the area that are serving families that we know would qualify or would likely qualify for camp. So those are very diverse, different organizations who help us connect with families and are already trusted partners for families. Really cool thing about that is once we build those relationships too, and we have a relationship with the camp family, we also will get calls in the off season when families are in a crisis or facing a challenge and they don't really know where to turn. And we can again make referrals back out to other organizations to help support with things that St. Vincent de Paul may not be equipped to help out with.
That's really cool. I'm sure that that you. In your role and in being at camp, you have lots of opportunities to see these kids really blossom once they get there. Do you have any stories about campers that you might be able to share with us about, you know, whether it's new skills or new adventures that they have?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there's millions. And then, of course, when you try to think of one, they all blend together. I think one of the coolest things for me has been seeing campers who become camp staff. So there's five former campers that are on our staff this summer. And almost all of them I knew when they were like 8 and 9 years old. And many of them were very shy. A lot of kids, the first time they come to camp, it's a whole new experience. They may never have been away from home before, certainly not sleeping in a cabin and doing all of these things that they've maybe never even heard of. So to see kids who are willing to step outside their comfort zone and try that, and then they just light up with the excitement of camp. They come back for 5, 6 years and then can't stop. They want to be on staff. They want to keep coming back and being part of that experience so that other kids can experience what they experienced. It's like the biggest selling point you could ask for. So that's one of my favorite things. We also have something new this year we just introduced called the Book of Firsts, where when kids try something new for the first time at camp, they can write it in the Book of Firsts. And I was reading through them earlier today, and there were some really fun ones. You know, some of them are climbing the bouldering wall for the first time, like they've never done a rock climbing experience before, making new friends. Someone tried oatmeal for the first time. They did not like it, but they did try it. So it's just cool to see kids who maybe are shy or maybe spend a lot of time on electronics to be away from all of that and to allow themselves to try new things and to be delighted and surprised by it.
Yeah, but, I mean, you mentioned the electronics. I hadn't even thought about that. So is there a phone policy? Is there a device policy that you all have at camp?
We are completely technology free. So the kids cannot bring any devices with them. It's a glorious challenge that we embark on here. Parents are so appreciative of it. It's the number one thing when we did that survey or the goal selection. The number one thing for parents was unplugging from technology. That was lower on the list for campers, as you might imagine. But it is so good. It's so good. And we hear from campers even afterward that they feel less connected to technology after having been at camp. It's a really big gift to be able to offer both kids and parents time away from that.
Yeah, that also brings to mind you talking about hearing from the parents. I'm sure in light of the news with the flooding at Camp Mystic and all the flooding happening in Central Texas, how has that impacted how you've approached safety? Or have you heard from parents who've been concerned about that in recent days?
Yeah, we haven't had any parents specifically reach out to us with that specific concern, but certainly around health and safety concerns, for sure. And I do want to say our staff has been praying for the Camp Mystic families as well. It's just a devastating loss, no matter what they had done to do all of the right things at camp. So they're certainly in our thoughts and prayers. But our strategy and policy is transparency, especially around health and safety issues at camp. So I will answer 50 questions that parents have before they come to camp, because we want both campers and parents to feel comfortable with the experience before the child comes. It's a little bit different than sending your kid to school or an after-school program or a field trip, because when they're here, they don't really get to call home. They don't have their cell phones. We don't have enough phones for the kids to all make phone calls home every day and update their parents. So we have updated a parent handbook where we put as much info as possible in there. We do a lot of emergency response training with our staff. And then again, just try to remain really transparent with parents about what we do and how we do it, so that if they're going to trust us to take care of their child for a week, they can feel really good about doing that.
So I know I have a lot of friends who either went to summer camp or maybe they eventually served as camp counselors. And it was always such a formative experience when they talk about it. They really describe it as something that was really important to them. And that they took so much away from it. What do you all hope that the campers take away at the end of a camp experience?
It's really different for every kid. We've got some core ones that I think are the biggest, and those would be disconnecting from technology, exploration, the willingness to try new things, self-confidence, building friendships, leadership skills, responsibility and independence. And then, of course, we are a Catholic camp, so growing in faith is a big part of the experience as well. And those are the common things that we'll hear from both our recent campers. So on our surveys, when we ask how camp impacted them, but also from alumni who very frequently will just stop by camp and say, hey, I was here in the 1950s. I think I left my toothbrush. Can I walk around and take a look or something like that? Those are the things we hear are really transformative about the camp experience. And those are all things that it's like this unique secret sauce of camp. It's unlike the school experience or an after school program or really anything else to have that week away from home and really as a kid be able to figure out who you are and how you want to be and how you can grow to be the best version of yourself.
I know I said that was going to be my last question, but I do have one more. So
it's okay.
You're thinking about how faith plays a role in this. What does faith formation look like? How is it integrated with the rest of the camp experience?
So there are some ways where it's really concrete. And then I would say there's some softer ways that it's integrated. So as far as programming goes, we have chapel time every morning and then a nighttime reflection each evening where the kids will hear a story from the Bible. The staff will do a reflection on it and usually have some challenges for the kids throughout the day. Those are often based around our camp values, which are accept, share, develop, and caritas, or charitable love. So we'll frame those chapels each day. We do graces before meals, which a fun camp thing is like the sung graces. If you were ever a scout, you probably learned those as well. But we've got the Superman grace and the Addams Family grace. So the kids get excited about those. We do have a Catholic mass once a week. We just had one today with Father Steve Polis, who had worked here as a seminarian and comes back to say mass for us. And then we also have a lot of like softer ways that faith plays a part in camp programming. So conversations with staff members, kids are often kind of intrigued and ask questions after a chapel time, or we were at the slingshot range and they were talking about the story of David and Goliath. So those little nuggets of introducing faith or exploring faith allow kids to, you know, have those seeds be planted and then ask questions to their counselors about what their faith looks like or what their faith journey has been. So it's both sides, the more formal faith-based part of things, but then those one-on-one connections and conversations are a huge piece of it as well.
So if folks want to learn more about Camp Ozanam or they want to support you, how do folks get involved or where should I send them?
There's a lot of different ways people can get involved, and most of it is housed on the website, which is great. So that's svdpdetroit.org/Camp Ozanam. We love to have volunteers. We're always looking for great staff members each year. People who are interested in sending their kids to camp can get more information on there as well. And then, of course, there's information about different ways that you can support the camp financially, too, all housed on the website.
Camp Ozanam seems like such a special place. I'm so glad you were able to be with us and share your story today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real treat.
How fun was that? I think I'm ready to make some s'mores and maybe even sing some campfire songs. I really enjoyed this and I hope you did as well. On the next episode of Inspired by Their Stories, we'll be talking with Vicky Sokolik, the founder and CEO of Starting Right Now in Tampa Bay. Her organization provides housing, mentoring, and support to unaccompanied youth. That is, kids who are not living with their guardians but are also not in foster care. We'll be talking with her about how she became aware of the struggles that homeless youth face and what she decided to do about it. That will be coming your way this September. You won't want to miss it. That's a wrap on this episode of Inspired by Their Stories from the Pulte Family Charitable Foundation. If you're feeling inspired, please share this episode with a friend. Until next time, be good to each other and inspire others to do the same.